ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text Number 23. Chapter 12 is Birth of Emperor Parikshit, and this morning we're going to hear about the qualities of Maharaj Parikshit as the performers of his name-giving ceremony have looked at his horoscope, and they're now describing what his qualities will be. Maharaj Yudhisthira is very anxious because it's one of the duties of a king to see that there's a qualified person to succeed him. And Maharaj Parikshit is to be that person to rule the kingdom after he finishes his rule. And so he wants to know what are the qualities by which this newly born child will manifest. And I like particularly Prabhupada also spoke that the most important qualification after this speakers began speaking, he stopped them and said, I don't know, is he going to follow his forefathers? Is this quality, that quality? Maybe they have this quality, that quality, but they don't follow. Everything is spoiled. So, and his strength, his forbearing nature, his magnanimity, these different qualifications there that are described. This morning, we're going to hear about how he was, he had equanimity of mind. What does that quality mean, having equanimity of mind? He was munificent. You know what munificent means? We'll find out. Very charitable. We have that description about Mahaprabhu, right? The most munificent form of the Lord. Did you ever wonder what that means? Very charitable. Spiritually charitable. And the third is that he's the resort or the shelter of everyone. Everyone feels they can take shelter of Maharaj Parikshit. So here's the verse. Pitamaha sama samye prasadi grihisho pamaha ashraya sarva bhutanam yata devo brahmashrayaha. This child will be like his grandfather Yudhisthira or Brahma in equanimity of mind. He will be munificent. Sachi, what does munificent mean? Charitable, merciful. Like the Lord of the Kailash Hill Shiva. And he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, who is even the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. We'll read something, in like paragraph at a time, like we did the other day. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mental equanimity refers both to Maharaj Yudhisthira and to Brahma, the grandfather of all living beings. According to Sridhara Swami, the grandfather referred to is Brahma, but according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, the grandfather is Maharaj Yudhisthira himself. But in both cases, the comparison is equally good because Both of them are recognized representatives of the Supreme Lord. And thus, both of them have to maintain mental equanimity, being engaged in the welfare work for the living being. Any responsible executive agent at the top of administration, none of us that have some administration, has to tolerate different types of onslaughts from the very persons for whom he works. Brahmaji was criticized even by the gopis, the highest perfectional devotees of the Lord. The gopis were dissatisfied with the work of Brahmaji because Lord Brahma, as creator of this particular universe, created eyelids which obstructed their seeing Lord Krishna. They could not tolerate a moment's blinking of the eyes, for it kept them from seeing their beloved Lord Krishna. So what to speak of others, who are naturally very critical of every action of a responsible man. Maharaj Yudhisthira had to cross over many difficult situations created by his enemies, and he proved to be the most perfect maintainer of mental equilibrium in all critical circumstances. Therefore, the example of both grandfathers for maintaining equanimity of mind is quite fitting. I'll discuss this. If there's two more paragraphs, I'll discuss this. Maharaj Parikshit is going to become a king by succession as the only surviving heir to the throne. So it's important for Maharaj Yudhisthira to know what his qualities will be, and he is being told by the astrologers that he'll be samaha. Equally good is how Prabhupada is translated. Samaksarveshu bhuteshu samah. The seeing all living entities equally is that connotation. Yavanaya sambhani brahmani gali hasani shrini chai vasubhai svapake cha pandita sama darshana. Seeing with equal vision, sama darshana. And in the case of a king, he's not just to see, like a brahmana is to see, or a learned person is to see, he's supposed to also do something. It's not just neutrality or being passive. A king has to take care of people. As later we're going to hear that he gives shelter to all. So, give shelter to all by seeing them all equally. And that's a nice notion, a popular notion. We should treat everybody equally. But treating everybody equally starts with vision on the spiritual platform, seeing the soul, pandita samadarshana, just as the illustration Prabhupada scripted it. They see the soul within every living being, and that's what's explained within the, not literally like seeing as we're seeing with these eyes, because the soul is smaller than 1/10,000th tipper. It's subatomic. You can't see atoms. You can't see subatomic. But see through the eyes of scripture. In that sense, yaksha, avagamam dharmyam susukam kartamadhyayam. With devotion, there's a living entity that's part and parcel of Krishna. And because Krishna is dear, the part and parcel of living entity is dear. And what do you do with those who are dear to you? The king maintains, he gives protection. He's an agent of the Supreme Lord. It's actually the Supreme Lord that maintains and gives protection. But he's acting as an agent of the Supreme Lord to maintain and give protection. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Ara Sava Vritya. One Supreme Ishwar or Isha. And he, that one, Ara Sava Vritya, he's maintaining all, and all others are his servants as he's maintaining them. So, who should a king maintain? A king should maintain all living beings in his kingdom. So many times Prabhupada would speak about this in terms of animal protection as opposed to animal slaughter. Why the cow, or for that matter any animal, but why the cow who also takes birth in the land is not a citizen? Because the qualification is you take birth in the land, therefore you're a citizen. So, to have that vision, one is a religious idea that says cows should be protected. But then there's a spiritual conception that says all living beings should be protected. All living beings should be seen with equal vision. And then maintained and protected. And two personalities are identified. Pitamaha sama samye. So there are two words, sama and samye. Samye, in the matter of protection. Pitamaha sama samye. So pita, iti, what's the meaning? Pita.
Father?
Yeah, father. So pitamaha is maha, like you're saying, maha.
Yeah, I know what it means.
It means great, great, like maha, prasad and maha prasad. Okay. Right? So, pita maha means grandfather, father and grandfather. Great, that'd be other. Pita maha, grandfather. So, who's the grandfather of Maharaj Pariksit?
Yudhisthira.
So as Maharaj Yudhisthira was sama, very equipoised in mind, equanimity of mind. A very similar term is dhira. Dhira is, I guess, it's the same meaning as equipoised in mind. Sober. Prabhupada uses that translation, sober, dhira, dhira. It's one who is dhira, that's used in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where a yogi is supposed to be dhira. So dhira is, they see things outside with equal disposition, see equally opposite things. A pebble, stone, and gold. So most people would get very excited about gold. Not very excited about a pebble. You saw so many pebbles by the ocean. Who got excited? Oh, there's a pebble. But if they saw some gold, they'd take notice. But dhira is one who sees with equal vision. Happiness and distress. That's interesting. Happiness and distress. Happiness and distress. Honor and dishonor. Pleasure and pain. Winter and summer season. Hot, cold, wet, dry, up, down, dark, light. There's duality in this world. And being equally disposed to the features of duality as one was dhira. Prabhupada explained, very simple point, that when there's no cause for disturbance and one remains undisturbed, that's not a very wonderful thing. But when there's cause for disturbance and one remains undisturbed, that is a very wonderful thing. That is dhira. There's a cause for disturbance. Supposing you don't want something, or you want something, and it doesn't come, or it's something you don't want, it comes. And you remain equipoised in mind. really beautiful example of this is Ambarish Maharaj. Particularly I like. Because when the fiery demon was created by Durvasa Muni, by taking some hair from his head and dashing it to the ground and uttering some mantra that would create a fiery demon. The fiery demon was waiting his order, and Maharaj, Durvasa Muni, pointed at Durvasa Muni. Kill him! And the fiery demon started proceeding towards Maharaj Ambarish, who was such a dira. Although he's a king. We were doing charades over the weekend. Although he was a king, and what do kings do when when there is some challenge? They protect. So, what specifically it says is Maharaj Ambarish did not move his feet or arms, and he did not move his mind. His mind did not even like make an adjustment. Oh, here comes the fire demon. Death is approaching. Maybe I should do something. His body didn't move, and his mind didn't move. Because he was accepting, I've offended Durvasa Muni, I'm deserving some reaction, and therefore let it come. Like the verse that we try to remember when we're in some difficult circumstance. Where Lord Brahma prays like this, because he just did a big boo-boo. He offended Krishna and through offending the cowherd boys and the calves. He kidnapped them. You know, in modern times, he's in jail. Big time kidnapper. Whole bunch of cows, calves, and whole bunch of cowherd boys. Put them in a cave and hid them. Holding ransom. What's Krishna going to do now? But when he realized, I'm in big trouble. His position was, let the reaction come, whatever it may be. I'm not going to take my mind and try to figure out how to counter this reaction that's coming my way. I'll just accept it. But instead, let my mind not budge an inch from the lotus feet of Krishna. That's my determination. That's where the quality of dhira comes. The quality of dhira, say backwards, comes from fixing the mind completely on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. When that is one's attachment, then one is dhira. Or then one can not only see living entities equally until they start harassing you or treating you nicely, mind starts to move normally. But the mind doesn't move if not only seeing on a spiritual platform, but being attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, let me be the servant of all these persons. Now, what's appropriate for service in this circumstance may not be appropriate in that circumstance, but the service disposition doesn't change. That's a challenge. And Yudhisthira Maharaj demonstrated that qualification. Favorite little passage from Mahabharata is after Bhima came back after being poisoned enough to kill 10 men and went to Nagaloka and was relieved by that poison, by the biting of the Nagas, because they had their poison was the antidote to that poison that he was given, and so he was revived. And he was rewarded. He was treated like a king, by the king of the Nagas. Details and details. And then when he returned, after having taken their nectar that made him more powerful than so many elephants, and he came back and reported to Queen Kunti, his mother, and his brothers what happened, because the Nagas told him what happened. You were poisoned by your buddy, by your cousin, Duryodhana. He tried to kill you. But fortunately, you're saved. So he told Maharaj Yudhisthira and Kunti what to do. And he was ready to rip Duryodhana apart. Murder. Attempted murder. But very wisely, Yudhisthira said, this isn't the right. Because we've just come back from being with our father from some long time, being away from the royal palace. And all the friendships and alliances have been made with others who are aligned with Duryodhana. And even what he did was so reprehensible. It's not the right time. Don't do anything. Just be on guard. Feels prudent. Wise. And even when the house of... Anyway, so many things. He again and again exhibited this equanimity of mind. When he came to the lake and saw his four brothers were dead, apparently. So, you know, overwhelmed by thirst, he also came to drink and the yaksha came. And he maintained his mental equilibrium perfectly in all challenging circumstances. Vrivasmudi came with his 60,000 associates and followers and said, I'm hungry, please feed me. And he knew that Yudhisthira would not be possible. But when challenging circumstances come, to maintain equanimity of mind, you can't take it or pretend it or cosmetically put it on. It doesn't work that way. It has to be a great attachment to the personality of Godhead. Has to be. Otherwise it won't be there. And Lord Brahma, who another Pitamaha, which means? Pitamaha means?
Grandfather.
Grandfather. Very good. So, because he's the father, the grandfather of all fathers. The original father of all fathers. Of course, Brahma has a father too. Lord Vishnu. But he's called Pitamaha. So he had a very challenging circumstance. The gopis cursed him for doing what he was supposed to be doing. Creating bodies that have eyelids. The gopis cursed him. So then Prabhupada's point is, what to speak of ordinary people who are at a drop of a hat? There's nothing going on, and they'll criticize somebody who is simply trying to serve them. There's one purport a shelter-giving purport in Prabhupada's first canto, Bhagavatam, where he says that one should act in all circumstances of life in such a way that a reasonable person will never find fault with what one is doing, knowing full well that, you know, that action will always be faulted by the very persons who one is trying to serve. It's a fourth canto quote. And this is the way that one who is serving others should live. But challenging, because we're not beyond duality, because we want, you know, this should be recognized as this, and that's recognized as that, and not mix this with that. It's only reasonable. But the higher reasonable is expect that this will be mixed with that, and that will be mixed with this, but maintain behavior and speech in such a way that a reasonable person will find no fault with it, knowing full well there'll be fault found by those who are. That's life. It happens all the time. You don't have to be in a big position. You just have to live, and you find that it happens. And you know, one would expect, okay, in non-devotee circles I expect that, but in devotee circles I don't expect that. Well, until we're pure devotees, you should expect that. And therefore, what keeps the mind in this position of equanimity, unchanging, even in challenging circumstances? It's shelter in the lotus feet of Krishna. That's Lord Brahma's teaching. I will not allow my mind to budge one inch from the lotus feet of Krishna. That's great determination. One final thing with this paragraph. I found it interesting that in sequence, Prabhupada says that Sridhar Swami, in his commentary, writes that Pitamaha means Lord Brahma. And following, chronologically following the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Maharaj Yudhisthira. Now we have heard, haven't we, that a commentator should follow the commentary of Sridhar Swami. And if one doesn't follow the commentary of Sridhar Swami, then he's a prostitute. Because one who's not under the control of Swami is a prostitute. Right? We've heard that. So, how is it that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying something different than Sridhar Swami? Because he's not a prostitute. He's fully qualified. Acharya. How is that? This is where it comes to a fine distinction between principle and detail. Prabhupada clarifies in the final part of this first paragraph, that is, the principle is the same, equally the same in both Brahma and Maharaj Yudhisthira. And that is, the example of both grandfathers for maintaining equanimity of mind is quite fitting. So the adjustment is, it's not a contradiction of Sridhar Swami, it's another example of the same principle who was also grandfather. And Prabhupada explains that amongst our acharyas, it's perfectly allowable that there's diversity of opinion amongst our acharyas. Perfectly allowable that there's diversity of opinion. But never will there be contradiction of principle. The subtle points, that's something that Prabhupada elaborates in the purport, but it struck me when I was reading it.
This child will be like his grandfather, Yudhisthira, or Brahma, in equanimity of mind. He will be munificent, like the lord of the Kailash Hill, Shiva. And he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is even the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. And there we go. Lord Shiva is a celebrated demigod who awards gifts to beggars. His name is therefore Ashutosh, or one who is pleased very easily. He is also called the Bhutanath, or the Lord of the common folk, who are mainly attached to him because of his munificent gifts, even without consideration of the after effects. Ravana was very attached to Shiva. And by easily pleasing him, Ravana became so powerful that he wanted to challenge the authority of Lord Ram. Of
God. Chopping it.
Of course, Ravana was never helped by Lord Shiva when he fought with Ram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord of Lord Shiva. To Vrikasur, Lord Shiva awarded a benediction which was not only awkward, but also disturbing. Vrikasura became empowered by the grace of Lord Shiva to vanish anyone's head simply by although this was awarded by Lord Shiva, the cunning fellow wanted to make an experiment of the power by touching the head of Lord Shiva. Thus the Lord had to take shelter of Vishnu to save himself from trouble. And the Lord Vishnu, by his illusory potency, asked Vrikasura to make an experiment with his own head. The fellow did it, and was finished himself. And so the world was saved from all sorts of trouble by such a cunning beggar of the demigods. The excellent point is that Lord Shiva never denies anyone any sort of gift. He is therefore the most generous, although sometimes some kind of a mistake is made. The example of Lord Shiva is given here because he is regarded as munificent. It's a trait of Maharaj Parikshit whom we're talking about here. The particular role or duty of a real hero, qualities of a hero, is that he's very benevolent, likes to give in the form of instructions and commodities and things like that. Some of these qualities are given in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, describing a kshatriya. A kshatriya is a man of passion. Yet in his passion, he likes to give. He's powerful, resourceful, he's very determined, he's good at defending, etc. These are the qualities of kshatriya, the qualities of Maharaj Parikshit. So lined up with Parikshit is Lord Shiva in that regards. And as we heard in this paragraph by Srila Prabhupada, Lord Shiva, who is known as Asutosh, was very pleased. And also Bhutanath means one who is the king of the Bhutas, disembodied beings. Prabhupada gives the example, common people. So maybe common people are ghostly. I guess that's... We're all a little bit disembodied sometimes. We're all a little bit separated from our bodies and separated from our minds. And in many regards, we're kind of all over the place with our senses. You know, our eyes take us this way. Our nose, ears take us somewhere else. And really, we're all like a jigsaw puzzle, all dismembered. You know, that's really what we are. Lord Shiva's kind of those kind of people to the common people. And he'll easily give benedictions. Vrikasura was a person descriptions of persons like him would be described in the 16th chapter in the Asuric category. He would be harsh, he'd be arrogant, he'd be proud, conceited, etc. And so Vrikasura, who was very hungry for power, wanted to have the power of even Lord Shiva. He wanted to have that kind of benediction. And he asked from his Lord, his Guru, you can say, his God, I want to have the ability to be able to destroy or cut in half the head of any person I would touch. So Shiva did just that. It's very difficult being a leader sometimes. Sometimes you have to do thankless tasks and give things to people that are not good for them. It's a little bit like when you're having children and they're just gnawing at you for having more candy, more sweets, and after a while, after they nag you to death, you give in at some point. And so sometimes parenting is a thankless task.
For the demigods, it's like that too. They're there to
give gifts, and sometimes it's a thankless task.
Demigods, they're in a position of administration,
as Maharaj pointed out. Administrative duties sometimes seem like a thankless task.
Almost like you could
draw a target on your back, and then you give everyone a bow and a few arrows and say, "Okay, guys, whenever you're ready, shoot." It's almost like that.
We shouldn't be too discouraged by taking up administrative duties. Somebody has to do the job.
Even Lord Krishna himself has been criticized. He has his critics. Srila Prabhupada has had his critics. It's the way it is. Your spouse will be your biggest critic, Aries.
And everyone is there to criticize. And people are very good at this. It doesn't take much talent, usually. And most people are not very good at self-criticism.
They're just good at criticism of others. A Vaishnava tries to look at himself, holds up a mirror and says, "That's some problems, buddy. Sarma."
And, you know, we do have a blind spot for ourselves. We can't see where our weaknesses are.
Just the way it is. It's another.
But we need people to help us.
And certainly we get by with a little help from our friends. In this regard, Guru, Krishna, Sadhu, the whole community of devotees are there to help us.
Anyway, somebody has to take the job of being the alpha male or being the leader, something like that. You know, that has to be done. It's a given. Krishna himself decides to come to act as a substitute for a position, a post, if it's not being filled in, a demigod post. He'll sometimes incarnate and take that role. And Krishna was born into a Vaishya community, as you know, cowherd community. But he was transferred quickly from prison to be in a safe area where cowherd people were, existing. But after he finished his childhood, he went to Mathura and thereafter to Dwarka to establish his own. And he became a Kshatriya. There was some need. So it has to be done. And most people who are leaders don't always like to be there. They'll come out and admit it. "I don't like this." Even in the Mahabharata, warriors in the midst of the battle are saying, "I don't know why I'm a Kshatriya. I don't like this." And you can almost hear Arjuna saying, "I don't like this. I have to fight. I don't like it." But Krishna's saying, "Too bad. You have to do it. Someone's got to do it. And everyone's looking up at you." So that's the idea. Somebody has to take up leadership of our roles. Then we're just getting on with the story of Vrikasura. We know that Krishna came to him, young boy, and he tried to help the situation because Lord Shiva is now in trouble. Vrikasura was thinking, "I'm going to touch your head." And Shiva didn't take kindly to that. He backed off. Krishna came in on the scene, said, "You really believe this? Come on. Can't be true. It's not possible that just by merely touching someone's head, the head will crack and break in the smithereens. You don't believe that. So if you really think it's true, just try it on yourself." So Vrikasura, I guess he wasn't so bright.
He did it.
And that was one very quick way of relieving the world of a demon. Okay. Krishna has his ways. So the main point here is to be munificent, to be kind, even in the case of, let's take another example. Drona was very heavily criticized by Duryodhana.
Why did you give all the secrets of Kshatriya skills to the enemy? I'm just paraphrasing. But Drona was thinking, you know, his mind was that of a Brahmin. A Brahmin is what is generous, kind. And in the same token, a Kshatriya is also kind, at least to his citizens. Not just the humans, but all forms of life. Kshatriyas were ideal environmentalists. They didn't want to see anything unnecessarily disturbed, not disrupted. That was their nature. You know, it's a Vedic system, ecologically friendly. Kshatriyas would not see the spoiling of the atmosphere, the spoiling of nature, and what to speak of people. And a Kshatriya's role, or a leader's role, was always also to see that everyone's kept busy. My image, personal image of Pariksit Maharaj was not so much as the boy is described here, but I think of him as the warrior who went out and, you know, on his horse. And he just went out to check out what's going on, what's happening in my kingdom. And just to see that everything was just going right. I was personally raised in a farm community. And, you know, in our region, which is southwestern Ontario, the farmers, he would go out in his pickup, usually with his dog, in the back of the pickup or in the cab portion with the window rolled down, and, you know, the dog, you know, sort of and the wind coming and blowing his ears a little bit, you know. But, you know, the farmer would go around and he'd just check and see what's going on. There's a fence, you know, in order and disrepair, and if it is so, he'll fix it up. Are the animals, is the livestock doing okay? How are the crops? How are the plants growing, you know? Are there lots of weeds, you know? Just checking things out. Is a cow giving birth to a calf? And, you know, a farmer was usually so intuitive. In the middle of the night, he would oftentimes wake up. The cow was giving birth. It was often like that. It's kind of like that. They become very intuitive. Because a Vaishya is like that. He's the king of this plot of land. A Kshatriya is like the king of a much larger, you know, surface. It's like a farmer. He's got his family members, he's got his livestock, he's got his land, he's got his helpers, workers, and so like he's caring, and he's very giving, he's very generous. Anyways, that's kind of like the sort of strong impression that I have when I think of Maharaj Pariksit. He's on the horse, and he's checking out things, seeing that things are right, and that's quality of a good manager, somebody who goes around, looks around, pokes around, and sees that everything's, you know, people are happy, things are moving, the mission is moving ahead, and people are engaged, and everything's moving. Basically, this Hare Krishna movement, it's called a movement, that means we have to keep moving. Mm-hmm. And it's your move. It's not somebody else's move. It's your move. We'll hold up that mirror again. It's your move. Criticism or no criticism. Your move, part of your movement is to give, to be generous, to be kind, to give thanks. Hare Krishna.
One more paragraph.
Maharaj is very dear because he can keep this on the end of his knee and it won't slip off.
So what was the other quality? What was the first two qualities? What was it? Equanimity. What was the next one?
Munificent.
And what's the third one? Ashraya. Or resort or shelter. Just like Narayan. Just like Narayan is the shelter of the goddess of fortune. So many people want to take shelter of the goddess of fortune. But they're advised to take shelter of Lord Narayan because he's the shelter of the goddess of fortune. You have the goddess of fortune by shelter of Narayan. And Maharaj Pariksit is like Lord Narayan because he has taken shelter of Lord Narayan. He will be, this is the verse, he will be the resort of everyone. Like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is even the shelter of the goddess of fortune, in the purport. Rama means the goddess of fortune. And her shelter is Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the maintainer of all living beings. There are innumerable living beings, not only on the surface of this planet, but also in all other hundreds and thousands of planets. All of them are provided with all necessities of life for the progressive march towards the end of self-realization. But on the path of sense gratification, they are put into difficulty by the agency of Maya, the illusory energy, and so travel the path of a false plan of economic development. Such economic development is never successful because it is illusory. These men are always after the mercy of the illusory goddess of fortune. But they do not know that the goddess of fortune can only live under the protection of Vishnu. Listen to this sentence. Without Vishnu, the goddess of fortune is an illusion. You should therefore seek the protection of Vishnu instead of directly seeking the protection of the goddess of fortune. Only Vishnu and the devotees of Vishnu can give protection to all, because Maharaj Parikshit was himself protected by Vishnu, it was quite possible for him to give complete protection to all who wanted to live under his rule. End of purport. So, Ashraya is translated the word for word in the verse as resort. A little different than where we went over the weekend. We went to a resort. Very different meaning. I had to ring the whole time. Wasn't very... very nice resort. But Ashraya Sarvabhutanam is the Maharaj Parikshit is the shelter of all living beings because he's taken shelter of he who is the shelter of all living beings. That's Narayana. That's one of the meanings. Lord Brahma explains this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, why when Krishna was told by Lord Brahma, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of all living beings. He said, Brahma, what are you talking about? You're a learned person. How can you say this? I'm just a little boy. How can you speak this way? Brahma says, surely you are that Narayan. You are the shelter of all living beings because he who is the shelter of all living beings sees your expansion. And so you're the shelter of Lord Narayan, who is the shelter of all living beings. So you're the shelter of all living beings. And one who is in a position like Maharaj Parikshit, who is totally taking shelter of Lord Narayan, fully taking shelter of Lord Narayan, you're able to give protection to all by the potency of Lord Narayan. And then Prabhupada discusses in the purport, speak briefly so we'll have some time for questions, but Rama, the goddess of fortune, is the object of worship of those who want fortune. They want the benediction of Rama to get fortune, because she's the goddess of fortune. But Prabhupada is making it very clear. This goddess of fortune, Rama, is nowhere but in the service of the Supreme Lord, Narayan. And so, or Rama, is the name that's also used in Sri Brahma Samhita as the consort of Lord Vishnu. As Lakshmi is the consort of Narayan, Brahma is the consort of Lord Vishnu. So, those who want the wealth or the opulence of the goddess of opulence should take shelter of the husband of the goddess of opulence or the goddess of fortune. So for us as Vaishnavas, it's Lakshmi Narayan or Radha Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna through the mercy of Radha or Narayan through the shelter of Lakshmi. But not exclusively, because this exclusive doesn't exist. That's the point of the purport. Illusory. What's the goddess of fortune minus Narayan? Answer. Illusion. There is no such thing as the goddess of fortune minus Narayan. It looks like, that's what an illusion is. It looks like something that it isn't. Looks like something, but it isn't. Maya, not this. Not this. So, Maharishi Pariksit was a Vaishnava. He wasn't an illusion. He didn't accept the illusion to be the real and the real to be illusion. He accepted the real to be real and illusion to be illusion. And therefore, he was taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. And therefore, all opulence was there also with Maharaj Pariksit, as with his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and therefore he had much to be charitable with. And he was the shelter of all. The way the Prabhupada ends the purport is, all who wanted his shelter, all who wanted to live under his rule. But there were certain persons that didn't want to live under his rule, and personality of Kali was one of them, because he didn't abide by the standards of his rule. Kshatriyas to give protection to those who want shelter, and to admonish, as the Supreme Lord does, admonish the other group. Vinashaya cha duskritam, as part of protection. So, we were told that class ends at 9 o'clock, Masamenas. Is that the program here? More or less? Is there a fixed time when Guru Puja and Deity greetings start, or is kind of whenever they're ready? Okay. So we have time until whenever they're ready for some questions. That's an advanced stage. Tolerate. Practice tolerance. And when in practice tolerance means that rather than investing consciousness in the duality, you withdraw from duality and invest consciousness in absolute, the realm of spirit, or chant, or worship, or pray, or fix your mind on Krishna while you're over here, you're tolerating. And a more advanced stage is, it's at the mature stage, that the mind doesn't go there, it goes to Krishna. This is very unusual for Danish. I'll be very tolerant, but I'm astonished. Yeah.
I've been saying that I can protect
Krishna. Very good assess. Here's what it says.
Here, Maharaj Pariksit, person who gives shelter to the citizen.
He will be the resort of everyone like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan. Or, Maharaj Pariksit himself was protected by Vishnu, therefore it was quite possible for him to give complete protection to all who wanted to live under his rule. So he was giving protection as an instrument. But he was giving protection. but as an instrument. Not the door, because the Lord was getting protection and he was the instrument, but he was the instrument. He was doing something, giving protection. Like there's a law, I'll just expand. There's a question that sometimes arises in the matter of deliverance of a disciple, A or B. Is it Krishna that delivers the disciple, or is it the spiritual master that delivers disciple B? Like the venture A or B? Krishna who delivers the disciple, or B, is it the spiritual master who delivers the disciple? Or another? Another way of saying the same, under his recommendation. Any other? Yes.
Krishna would empower the spiritual master.
The spiritual master is a deliverer. The spiritual master delivers the disciple. Okay, we've got some diversity here. Come on, bro.
How about both? It's said by mercy of Krishna, one received. But on the other hand, we're
Krishna prasadi by. Okay, with this explanation. But we can speak either way, but when we speak that the king protects or the spiritual master delivers, we should bear in mind they're not entities unto themselves, they're merely representatives, but being a mere representative of the personality of God, it is not something, the postal peon delivers the letter. But an agent of the post office, the person who wrote the letter is somebody other than the postal peon, but he's delivering the letter. No, he'd give you the microphone for the answer.
This is an attachment. Attachment means dependence. In day-to-day situation,
we can refer to a verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains that in a certain way, he says that life will be full of tests, like often learned about yesterday. In which verse we find that Krishna will get some of those tests? Which verse from Bhagavad Gita? So, we thought about it, and there's one verse, Daivi Shikunamayi, Mama Maya Dharakya. That means that moving around in this world, an angel encountered many difficulties, lots of problems, tons of problems. They'll be there. And we should see them as tests. However, the second part of the verse states that one who takes shelter of the Lord, the source of that divine energy that we're talking about, that's so difficult. This divine energy, the three modes of material nature, which is posing lots of problems, the source of it is whom we must take shelter of. So full dependency must be there, Sarva Dharma, but it's regard all of the principles. Put your faith in Krishna, shelter. He'll take away all karma. He'll take away all pop, all sinful reactions, and he'll give you moksha, liberation. It's a pretty good deal, really good deal. And then, so, mashicha, don't worry, chill out, be calm, be relaxed, tolerate. Just have that kind of confidence that Krishna will be there. And all that we're asked to do is to be an instrument. Beings cooperate. Don't resist. We've been doing that for millions of lifetimes. It doesn't work.
So our discriminating faculty, not in contrast to or in opposition to ending up on Krishna. In that, when you're depending upon Krishna, Krishna supplies intelligence which you're then to use. He supplies all kinds of things, which were then patience, quality, he supplies so many things, which were then to use. But when we use them, as saying using our specifically, you're asking, using discriminating power, should be used in that mood. you know, acknowledging from whence it has come, and it is to be used in his service only. It's when Krishna supplies something and we fail to recognize from whence it has come and in what mood it should be used that we fall. Because we become and proud of, look at this, I've got this and I've got that. Krishna disappears. Pride. So one should not be proud of one's puny intelligence. Or we can be, there is something we can be proud of. We can be proud that Krishna is you know, kindly accepting us. Or Prabhupada used this phrase, we can be proud that we're part of Krishna's family. Proud of our heritage, that spiritual heritage that Krishna is being kind upon us. Not in the material sense of pride, but in our good fortune, and use things in that spirit. And it's not, there's no dichotomy. No, else yet.
But, sensitive subject for the book. How do you approach?
So the question is, how should we deal with individuals, especially from India, who've been trained and raised on this concept that Shiva's sad, etc.?
Top of the totem pole.
Yeah, top of the totem pole, wherever you want to put it. Well,
we were yesterday.
The best approach would be, you know, from what I've seen, is to not deter their, you know, devotion to Shiva. I'm going to answer it in a couple of different ways. One way is to encourage people to purchase some books, and Prabhupada can tell them more easily because he's Indian and older, and it will come very clear because the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, these are books about who's who and what's what. That's one way to get around it. Another thing we can do is to explain that we accept Lord Shiva as a worshipable Lord. We accept him as one of the great souls in the Vedic pantheon. We accept him as a manifestation of the Lord. He's an incarnation of God who's in charge of Dharma Gun. Nobody will argue that. He's known as Asutosh, Bhutana. These are terms that people should be familiar with. There's no dispute there. And then there's another phrase, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. And of all the great Mahatmas, he is the best. He's the best of the Vaishnavas. Then you can explain, well, what is a Vaishnava? And it goes from there. I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our great Lord of the common era, the father of the holy name, who traveled to the subcontinent of India, he went to lots of temples. He went to lots of temples. He went where there's Lord Shiva, Shiva Lingams, and so on. And then I saw first saw your temples. Oh, you got a Shiva Lingam next to you in here. At the water tower. But it's, you know, I think it can be explained from those terms that according to the Shastra, Vaishnavam Yatha Shambhu, and particularly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the summum bonum, the creme de la creme of Vedic knowledge, Vyasadeva's great contribution. Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. And what is a Vaishnava? One who is surrendered to Vishnu. So we don't have any problems with people liking Vishnu. Shiva. It's fine. You know. I mean, I consider it a great blessing that they're not followers of Elvis, like where some of us are coming from, you know. Some are at least part of the great family. But I guess when you expound upon what is a Vaishnava, you know, one who is committed to Vishnu, one who is a servant of Vishnu, it all comes together and makes some kind of sense. You know? But for most people who are very attached to these concepts, it sometimes doesn't work despite how you want, from what angle you take it. You just have to kill them with kindness get them involved in devotional service, and oftentimes eventually it just clicks in. Kicks in place, and oh, yes, Krishna's the supreme.
I have a lot. Oh.
This is a non-illusion. And all it does is distance and Prabhupada. Not to become Krishna. They say, why do you even use the word demigod? Just like, for example, our major donors. I haven't been hearing that talk about Prabhupada without mentioning his name, from where it came. I could have gone up there and said, rather I tried to do the same thing. At that time we said, oh, no, that's not the same, that's not the, and that's true. Our case is different. And what are we going to do then? We had Marty from Bangalore, who started from here. He gives us a bad name. And somebody from Bangalore.
That's what not to do. Yeah.
So
I think you just heard the answer to that question. I think you just heard the answer to your question before. Before you asked the question was the answer, and now you're asking the question. The answer is no. Discrimination about time and circumstance, and you don't know. If you're speaking with a particular individual with whom you have a particular relationship, you can speak, you know, according to that relationship. When you're with the internet, is not relationship; it's the whole world. Or with persons with whom you don't have a relationship, you don't understand what their sensibilities are, or you can assume, you know, it's all over the place. That's okay to add.
Himself, email thing. Or the first email he sent.
Okay. Anything else? Yes.
My attitude to consciousness to Krishna. When I hear the word tolerance, is it that we have?
Well, it's having a spiritual conception that there's degrees of that also, degrees of say jnana and vijnana. We would agree that we're spirit souls, not these bodies, but there's, as a principle, that there's degrees of that realization. And according, let's say, just to glorify Srila Prabhupada and how much pain he could endure, I could, you know, I had a whole, I shared lunch with Hari Sori once in Mayapur during our GBC meeting, and I knew that he had a health problem, so I asked him how his health problem was, and he was describing. But because of his association with Prabhupada, he just went on into a whole other discussion about his health problems and how Prabhupada was completely transcendental. But he just tolerated it. But his tolerate doesn't mean he wasn't aware. He just tolerated it. He transcended it. And he gave an example. He said there were two times Prabhupada had one kidney that didn't work at all, another that only half worked. That meant his body was regularly filled with toxins. And that was part of the massage, was to help relieve his body and some other method of relieving toxins. He said there were two nights when Prabhupada, in the middle of the night, rang his bell, the buzzer, and Hari Sori came in, and Prabhupada was just sitting there shivering and saying, you know, I can't translate. I'm in too much pain. But otherwise, he was always in pain. Always in pain. Then he gave another thing, went off into another example of having a toothache. So he had this abscess, infection pushing his cheek out. So they asked, can we take you to a dentist? And he said, no, dentist. Then a little bit, some days later, in the middle of eating, Prabhupada reached in his mouth, pulled out his tooth, and handed it to Hari Sori and said, here, you can have this, and kept on eating. You know what it's like when you have a toothache. And Prabhupada wasn't unaware, he wasn't oblivious of what was going on with his body. He just, his consciousness was in another place. So there's degrees of having a spiritual conception and being absorbed in the realization of relationship with Krishna. So much disposed towards service to Krishna, the other was just a distraction. So he didn't get distracted, aware of the pains and pleasures, but just was above it. Well, Krishna Maharaj described once Prabhupada was looking at his body like he was looking at a shirt, saying, oh, this is getting very old and useless. It's time to get another one. So you throw it away and get another one. They're detached. You know, not unaware of, but tolerating, transcending. Yes, yes. So then the term, your question was, what's the term tolerance mean? And then you gave the suggestion that being in a spiritual conception takes one out of just being tolerating. But you tolerate is, if there's like, you know, there's a scratch, do I itch it? You're in a position where you can itch it or not itch it. You tolerate it. You're aware that there's some pain, or there's some hurt, or some mental anguish, or there's some whatever, some feeling, because I'm identifying with duality. I recognize that feeling that's there, mental or physical, and you don't act on it. Tolerate is you don't engage with that energy. But the unspoken part is you have to then engage your energy in that instead of asat. So that's where the strength to tolerate comes from. The conviction and the engaging in sat. Then you can tolerate. To the degree, then it's in degrees, the spiritual conception. You have to know what sat is. Consciously choose sat until it just becomes spontaneously sat or service to Krishna. And so, when you're doing something that you like very much, you don't, you know, the heat doesn't bother you. Or the, whatever the thing is, it doesn't bother you. You're aware that it's hot. But you're just not, like, absorbed in it, like a complaining person is absorbed in, oh, it's so hot. Because of the service. That kirtan. Does Guru Puja come first? Or Indi greeting. Okay, so Guru Puja time. See the Prabhupada king? Yeah.